From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Waiting to die, eh? Thank you, Simon. It is Thursday's Richie Allen radio show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen radio show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Some very interesting things happening in Ireland right now. To discuss those, Fiona Marie Flanagan returns to the Richie Allen radio show. She's an Irish academic, social commentator and pro-life activist. She's very good, very articulate. Is Fiona joins me this hour. And for the last time this year, the wonderful Gerald Salente, the man behind the Trends Journal, trendsresearch.com, he joins me in hour two to talk about his top trends for 2021. Busy old radio show today. I always say that, don't I? Stop using cliches, you big baldy bastard, with your big egghead on you. But before that, we've got some breaking news. I'm going to go all Walter here now. I'm going to take off my glasses as I tell you that at 15:45 Eastern Standard Time today, 14:45 Central Time, I can confirm that Kay Burley, aka the Ginger Ninja, was suspended for 6 months by Sky News. Newswire's reporting the Ginger Ninja won't be back on breakfast television until around about June 2021.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I think I'm in shock because I feel pretty okay. I don't feel down or anything. It's got to be some sort of delayed reaction. Listen, to those of you who are saying karma, 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 chameleon, of course you're absolutely right. Of course. I take the mickey out of Kay Burley on this radio programme. At times we laugh at Kay's carry-on. But Kay Burley and Beth Rigby were the biggest champions of lockdown. Failed utterly to do their jobs, to be objective and to challenge the necessity of lockdown. They've been government mouthpieces since day one. So of course you're right to say she's a hypocrite and has to face the music, as it were. But of course the whole thing is utterly ridiculous anyway, isn't it? There you are, no Kay for a while. Ah, well, we'll have to make do, I suppose. 5.5 minutes it is past the hour. I know. Somebody will send me an abusive email now saying I'm mocking the death of JFK. I'm not doing anything of the sort. Now, the Irish Times is the Irish newspaper of record. And in today's Irish Times, it has been reported that it is morally permissible for Catholics to accept a COVID-19 vaccination which involves the use of cells derived from aborted fetuses. This is official now from the Irish Catholic Church, which traditionally, of course, teaches that it's unethical even to use stem cells taken from aborted fetuses for medical research purposes. However, on Wednesday, late yesterday evening, the Irish Catholic Bishops' Conference said that Catholics could accept vaccines using these stem cells if a more ethically acceptable alternative is not available. I think that's a big story. It's not getting any play outside of Ireland, if it is indeed even getting any play in Ireland. And I know my pal Fiona Marie Flanagan will have something to say about that shortly. Tomorrow, the Irish government will lay out its plans for the vaccine rollout in the Irish Republic. And in Ireland, they're going all in. Massive campaign underway to get people to take the vaccine using celebrities and influencers even, etc., etc. Claire Byrne is the mid-morning presenter on RTE Radio 1. Here's some snippets from her programme today.
Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
An unprecedented plan for the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine will be presented to the Taoiseach and the Minister for Health tomorrow. It's believed the plan will recommend the appointment of so-called vaccine ambassadors ambassadors, well-known figures, who'll encourage people to take the jab. But as the government prepares for the big sell, will our TDs lead the way on vaccine take-up? In a few moments, we'll talk to public health expert Dr. Gabriel Scally. But first, our reporter Barry Lennon is here. Hello, Barry.
Good morning, Claire.
You have been checking how many TDs are ready to roll up their sleeves for the shot. And what have you found?
Yeah, and this against a backdrop, remember, of big concerns among public health officials around vaccine uptake. The latest polls from Red Sea and Ireland Things show around 7 in 10 Irish people would take a jab if it was available to them. Some experts say this needs to be higher, and an important part of tomorrow's plan going to Micheál Martin and Stephen Donnelly will be recommendations to persuade the public take the vaccine.
Right, Micheál Martin is the Irish Taoiseach, he's the Irish Prime Minister, okay? Barry, they're speaking with Claire Byrne. Barry's the reporter. What did the TDs tell Barry? What percentage of Irish members of Parliament will take the vaccine?
So with that in mind, what of our public representatives? Will they lead the way when it comes to taking the coronavirus vaccine? Well, I asked all 160 TDs, including the Ciarán Cóirle, whether they'll take the COVID-19 vaccine when it's their turn to do so. We had a response rate of 93%, that's 149 of the 160, and 96.6% of them say they will take the COVID-19 vaccine when it's first available to them. Just 3.3% of those who responded say they won't take it or they haven't made up their mind. So 96.6 comparing to 70% of the general public, but all parties insisted that priority groups should receive the jab first and they don't expect preferential treatment.
Okay. Right, so the vast majority of TDs, a TD is a Chuck Dodola, I think even I told you that on the programme. A TD is the Irish version of an MP here in the UK, okay? I won't say that again, but I know people listen to this programme from all over the world. Let's talk then about the 3% of those who won't take it and what were their reasons back to Barry.
Three independent deputies say they won't take the vaccine for now. Tipperary's Matty McGrath, he says he fears the jab is being rushed through. He has concerns around vaccines generally, he says. Cork South West's Michael Collins won't take it either. He says, quote, "Whenever anyone asks me whether I'll take the vaccine, I respond, what are the ingredients? They don't know. And I say, well, there's my point." Deputy Collins says many of the people he's spoken to of all ages have grave concerns about the vaccine and are fearful they'll be pressurised into taking it. He's calling on the government to provide more clarity on the vaccine safety rather than depending on what he calls professionals and companies who make money from the vaccine. Another independent TD not taking the jab when first available is Limerick's Richard O'Donoghue. He has never taken the flu vaccine.
Richard O'Donoghue from Limerick is an independent TD and he's very interesting and very articulate. Listen to him explain why he will not take the vaccine.
My concerns is that there is four or five different vaccines, different strengths, different providers. What I want people to do is, if you're taking the vaccine, you make the choice yourself that you're not being pushed into anything, that you say, I want the vaccine, and if anything does happen down the line, you've made the decision yourself.
The government has yet to say whether it'll make it mandatory to take the vaccine. It probably won't. So will that not allay your concerns?
You have people at the moment that are scared because of the different media that's been put around the different vaccines, and one vaccine being saying that they've put out their results too soon. This creates concern. So regardless of a person, every person is different, and we have some people that want to take the vaccine, we have some people that are scared, they don't know enough about it, and we have some people then that want to say, listen, I will take it, but I want to make my own choice.
And you're not keen on taking it when it's first available?
I personally myself, and this is only me, would like to wait and see myself. In my household at home, we have 9 in our unit. We done a small survey ourselves. In our bubble is my own family, there is 9 in our unit. We have my wife's mother-in-law next door and my brother-in-law and his family next door. And we had all, that's our bubble. That's ranging from an age of 12 to 70. And I just asked out of the blue, would you take the vaccine tomorrow morning if it's available to you? And out of that group, only 3 said yes. Straight away.
Only 3 said yes straight away. Big stuff happening in Ireland, in the Irish Republic tomorrow, the rollout of, well, the announcement of plans to roll out the vaccine or vaccines when they become available. Really important stuff, this. Now, what really important, because we talked about this yesterday, the government is asking the politicians in Ireland, not just TDs, but also MEPs and senators, to publicly state they will take the vaccine and also to publicly support it. We talked yesterday about a conflict of interest, possibly, as the leader of the Irish Labour Party, his brother is involved with an initiative that received an enormous amount of money from Bill Gates. Talked about that yesterday as well. Now, on the same radio show, we're staying with Ireland, it's a very Irish-centric first hour. On the same radio show, Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, we heard from Donal Byrne. Now, Donal owns a bar in Ahamore in Mayo called Eileen's Bar. And he plans on opening up Eileen's Bar tonight, even though he's technically not supposed to do so. And he risks the Irish Gardaí coming along and closing down his bar. He's desperate to keep his bar open. So what he's done, he's gone and he's managed to purchase even some testing kits. And he's going to offer a test to his customers for €10, and customers passing that test then can come into the pub and have a drink, but he won't be serving food and he will be in breach of the regulations. Now, this man who owns this bar, Eileen's, has taken an unmerciful amount of criticism on social media. I don't think he deserves one bit of it. Have a listen to what he said to Claire Byrne on the radio in Ireland this morning. This is very, very interesting indeed.
We have rolled with all the punches that the government and the vintners have laid out, from serving food, where we did take out, and then we were told it wasn't substantial enough. We went with a catering company. We built and customised an outdoor area, and now this new regulation really favours gastro pubs. So obviously we know that the regulations were written in times of crisis, and they have gaping holes in them, and we feel this is a solution to the hole that the World Health Organization said at the start, that the only way out of this crisis was testing, and testing is what we're going to do. So we're not really reinventing the wheel. We are going with a local company called Communicare Medical Supplies, and they are buying their testing kits from a German company, their antigen kits, called Molab, M-O-E-L-A-B, GmbH in Germany.
Okay. So he's buying them from a company that's getting them from a company in Germany. That's Donal, the proprietor of Eileen's Bar in Ahamore, which is a rural part of County Mayo. Beautiful place, County Mayo, if you ever get a chance. Now, the presenter argues about the legitimacy of the test kits and argues that they're not recognised by Ireland's health authority. Okay, we don't need to hear the argument. She then reminds him that if he opens tonight, he's in breach of regulations. Listen to this gentleman explain why he's doing what he's doing and why pubs are so important in rural communities.
The very fact that you're open for drinks only is in breach of the health regulations. You know that, don't you?
Well, we have looked into this, and we feel that this is far safer. Food does not stop COVID. Using the word food in the tagline along with food does not mean that it stops you getting COVID. It is not the solution. Everyone is not going to have the vaccine taken very fast. We need to look at a long-term solution. What the solutions are in urban is not for rural, and very much the five-kilometre rule didn't work for the west of Ireland. We've been social distancing in the west of Ireland for the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm. We've been social distancing in the west of Ireland for the last 15 years. He might say for the last 200 years. He's talking there about occupancy in the pub at any one time.
And very much the 5 kilometre rule didn't work for the west of Ireland. We've been social distancing in the west of Ireland for the past 15 years. Mm-hmm. You'd be lucky to have 10 people in a pub on any given night. There's not large crowds, so it's totally different.
Yeah, so you just reject the health regulations.
Reject the health regulations. Do you agree that food saves you, or do you feel that a test would be safer? We feel that the regulations were written in time of crisis, and okay, that this is a solution.
But Donal, with most laws and regulations in this country, it doesn't really matter what I think. It's the fact that they are there. And if you don't obey them, there will be penalties to pay. And you know as well as I do that if you go ahead with this, the guards are well within their rights to close you down. And that's probably what they will do, isn't it?
I am not naive. And I know that some people are going to have issues with this. My eyes are open and I'm prepared to answer and I'm prepared to represent myself. This makes far more sense than saying that food and where food is stops COVID. We've seen social media have receipts from pubs up with two burgers and 24 pints. There's an awful awful lot of legal activity going on. This is making it regularised, and this is making it far more achievable, and it's far more sensible approach.
I just wonder, I get the sense from talking to you that this is about making a point, Donal, for you, is it? It's to raise the issue and highlight it.
Well, 100%. If you take rural Ireland and the mental health status that is there at the moment and the suicide rates that are absolutely huge that are not been spoken about, and the people that are drinking large quantities of drink that have been bought for very cheap prices out of supermarkets, the pub in rural Ireland is far more than a place of drinking. It is a place where you can socialise and share your worries or fears and a problem share is a problem halved. And we have fallen and rolled with the punches for the last 9 months with the government and with the vintners, and it has gone from food to no food to outdoor to gastro and has no consistency.
Okay.
At the start, the World Health Organization said the only way out this is testing, and that's what has to be done.
And nobody had any sympathy for him on social media today. He was getting dogs abuse because he was getting testing kits in, buying testing kits from a company which is buying them from Germany, and he was taking an enormous amount of flack for that. You know, as if he was part of the problem, part of the establishment. The madness of it. He runs a rural pub in Ahamore in Mayo. He's just beautifully and eloquently explained the importance of pubs in that part of the world. It's not about going to a pub to get pissed. It's going to the pub to play bridge. It's going to the pub as an elderly man or an elderly woman living on your own. To be in company. To get the news. To speak to people. To get a bit of help if you need it for one thing or another. The importance of the focal point, the pub, can't be overstated. And they fucked him around, didn't they? The government did it to him. They did it to every other pub, publican or landlord in the country. Do this. All right. Now do that. Stop that. Now do the other thing. One way in, one way out. Only one person in the loo at one time. He did it all and they've closed him again and condemned the community. This fucking nonsense. And people were having a go at him today because he bought the testing kits in. The chap's at his wit's end. You're living in an era in 2021 when a gentle, very gentle sounding manager, landlord of a pub in the countryside is facing the prospect of opening his pub tonight and the Garda Síochána corner, the Irish police, coming in and closing him down. What the fuck is going on? So what else is there for him to do? Geez, I'll buy some of these testing kits and I won't make any profit on them. I'll just buy them and I'll break even on them. I don't want to make money on them just so I can get some punters in the fucking door to have a couple of beers. You know, and the pub's not turning over 5 or 6 million euro a year. It's not about him and money. It's about the importance of it. Look what they've done to rural communities. They've taken the fucking post offices out of there. They've taken banks out of there. They've taken everything out of there to drive people out of the countryside and into their super cities. Starving people of love and kindness and compassion and company and decency. And yet people criticising him today over asking his customers to take a test. Wow, 21 minutes past the hour. You might have been following the case. We'll get more on this from Fiona Marie Flanagan very soon. A Cambridge University, as you probably know now, wanted to introduce a dreadful, dreadful regulation for students. They wanted to require students to be respectful of differing views. As I always say, how deliciously Orwellian or deliciously dystopian. Anyway, thanks be to Jesus. They've amended these plans because the faculty fought back, thank God. Now students are only to be required to tolerate views they disagree with or views they loathe. No compulsion to respect views. Fan-dabby-dozy. Here's Asif Ahmed. Asif is a philosophy professor at Cambridge explaining why this is good.
Respect involves, something like admiration or appreciation. It can extend as far as deference. And most importantly, the problem is that the term is vague and so can be used in restrictive ways. Tolerance is more sharp-edged. So to tolerate something, all that's needed is that you accept its existence, whether or not you agree with it, or whether or not your own beliefs and writings and sayings offend the person who holds those beliefs.
And what do you say to those people who are able to cite examples of subjects discussed that they find intolerable and whether they have any right to say, actually, no, not here?
Well, I think the point of a university is that you should feel free to discuss pretty much anything that's of intellectual interest. And indeed, a university couldn't exist and carry out its function properly unless people did feel completely free to carry out an entirely open discussion of ideas.
Can you give us an example of the type of discussion that you were worried would be beyond the pale had this intervention not happened?
Yeah, I'll give you an example from my own work. So as you said, my subject is philosophy. And when you teach a subject like philosophy, students come and are and should expect to have their most fundamental beliefs about just about everything questioned. This includes, for instance, their beliefs with regards to religion or with regards to immigration or political arrangements or euthanasia or abortion or a whole range of very important life and death ethical and political questions. Now, in philosophy, you can't really achieve what you're trying to do in the teaching of it unless you're prepared to be completely honest about what you think and why you think it, and unless you're prepared to have your beliefs attacked, rationally, but attacked. And the concern is that many people will find this offensive precisely because those beliefs are so deeply held.
Yes.
But it's an important part of the teaching process that should happen.
Yes, yes, yes. You must have your beliefs attacked. You must be open to the things you believe being attacked and not personalise that, not take it personally, not take it seriously, not take yourself seriously, and allow somebody say to you, I think you're an idiot, or I think your beliefs are ridiculous, I think you're a moron. Fair enough. Move on. He put it very eloquently there. Diane says, Richie, the pub's being closed has cut off my local news feed. My friends and neighbours died recently. I didn't know until I called in to see how he was getting on, only to find he had passed away. Had the pub been open, I would have found out that he had passed away, and obviously would have been able to rally round, go to the funeral, presumably. Rural pubs are essential. And I often mention my great friend, Jean Anne Crowley, who lives in Cleggan in the west of Ireland. She says, our local Oliver's is the hub of the small community here. And for people on their own in that part of the world, the pub is essential. It is essential. Thanks, Diane. Thanks to everybody else who's leaving comments. I will get to them. Let me just say a very quick hello before I take a tune and before we speak with who's on first. It's Fiona Marie Flanagan, of course. It is. Let me give a shout out to Carolyn and Marco. Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Marco. Thanks for your lovely tweet. We listen every day, said Carolyn and Marco, and we would be lost without your show. How utterly depressing the two of you. Carolyn and Marco, this is for you. This is Jamiroquai. I am the BBG, by the way. This is not the BBC. The Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Looking forward to speaking to Gerald Celente in the second hour. Before that, Fiona Marie Flanagan, live from Dublin. After Canned Heat, what a tune. I want to say hi to Kelly Marr. Kelly's in London. And I'm not sure if I should say that Kelly is Irish or she's the daughter of Irish immigrants. You're Irish anyway, Kelly, I think. How you doing, Kelly? Long-time listener to the programme. And hi to Angela Lambert. How you doing, Angela? Angela met a really good guy called Jeff. A great guy, she says. And we've bonded over you, Richie. Say hello and thank him for me. I know he's listening, Angela Lambert and Jeff. Lovely to meet you all as well, it really is. Thanks so much for listening to this programme. Let's get Fiona on the other end of the line then. She's standing by in Bolia Óchaclia. I mentioned at the top of the programme, she is, in my opinion anyway, very respected Irish academic, social commentator and pro-life activist. She's brilliantly articulate, and I've enjoyed speaking with her on the programme this year. Welcome back to the show, Fáilte Road, Fiona Marie Flanagan. How you doing, Fiona?
Hello, Richie. I'm as good as can be expected. I keep saying this to you when we meet, but as you quite rightly say, this thing is getting more dystopian by the day at this stage.
It is. And there's a story now in today's Irish Times that ordinarily would have gotten, I think it would have gotten a lot of coverage here in the UK because of such a sizable Irish community here in this part of the world. But news coming out from the Irish Catholic Church even, that if people want to take the vaccine that has been brought into existence using cells derived from aborted fetuses, well, the Irish Catholic Church has said, well, it's okay, we're in the middle of a pandemic, it is ethically even acceptable. What's your response to that? And what do you think? I know you can't speak for every Christian or every Catholic in the country, but what do you think? How's that going to go down?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I suppose I would speak for a more traditionally minded group of Catholics. Now, that's not to say I've always been like this, Richie. As I said to you before, I've taken the scenic route back to my Catholicism and then fell foul of the Novus Ordo, i.e. Vatican II Catholic Church, which confused me and confounded me. But I found myself back at a more traditional footing, which I feel more comfortable with. So I guess that community of Catholics, and there would be a number of us now, would be very distressed, very, very upset, hurt. I have lots of WhatsApp groups at this stage. But this first thing this morning, a good friend of mine posted that very article. And they all said in this particular group that they were heartbroken. So straight off, I got onto Twitter and I put it out and I said, Babylon has fallen. Because in my prophetic view of things, Rich, you know, there's many ways we can view what's going on now, you know, politically, economically would be the way I would look at it mostly. But there's also a spiritual angle in my view. And sadly, I see the Catholic Church as the whore of Babylon in the book of Revelation. I believe it has fallen. And the fact that it is endorsing or condoning or saying that it's morally acceptable to accept vaccines derived, as you say, from aborted fetal cells, it's reprehensible. It's absolutely appalling. And while we're on the subject, I just want to explain to your listeners that we in our Catholic community believe very strongly that the Catholic Church has been infiltrated and heavily infiltrated in the past century, especially since Vatican II. And I'd like to draw your listeners' attention to a book called The Permanent Instruction of the Alta Vendita, which basically lays out the Masonic blueprint for the subversion of the Catholic Church. And what has happened is it has been infiltrated with these more liberal, Gnostic even, but Freemasonic ideas. And a lot of its principles and morality has been compromised. And this is a red line for me. And I know a lot of Catholics that I would share these views with would have hoped that this would have been a last vestige for us of resistance to this vaccine. We can talk about vaccines as a separate issue, but purely on moral and ethical grounds. And that's now been stripped away from us. So heartbroken, Richie, is my response.
No, well said. Listeners to this programme who've been with this programme for long enough will have heard me speak once or twice with the great Tradcat Knight, who of course comes on and talks about traditional Catholicism and a lot of what you said there. He's articulated to me in the past as well. I'm finding myself spiritually. I don't know where I am or what I believe, but I have an enormous amount of respect for what you said. And whether I believe in God or don't, I can't countenance using aborted fetuses or cells from aborted fetuses in any medicinal capacity. To me, it's ugly and horrible and dangerous. And I can't understand how you couldn't manufacture a drug or a vaccine without doing that. It's never sat well with me, that, you know.
No, and I understand that, and I applaud that, Richie, from my perspective. And in fact, you know, I know a lot of professed atheists who feel the exact same way. The trouble is, I think right now we have lost as a society at large, certainly in Ireland and more globally, in fact, we've completely lost our moral compass. And it just seems that this sort of behaviour has become normalised and acceptable. And it's almost like we, you know, have become desensitized to even thinking about this. And in our quest for the elixir of health, and I'm so afraid of dying. And that's again born of, you know, no sort of faith in something bigger than yourself. I think the fear of dying has been sort of used and preyed upon during this pandemic, such that you'll do anything to stop yourself from dying. It is your religion to keep yourself alive as long as possible. Whereas, you know, if you have faith, and certainly in my perspective, you've reconciled to the fact that you will die, you'll hopefully die in a state of grace, and you're not afraid. And I say that honestly, you know, I've gone rounds and rounds and rounds with myself through this pandemic. And I, you know, years ago in 29, remember the swine flu pandemic, I hadn't got my faith then. And honestly, I was petrified. And I never want to be in that position again, Richie. So, yeah. So yes, it's not just, as I say, people of faith who feel this. There are many out there. Sadly, not enough, though.
And before we talk about the vaccine and the rollout of it and the Irish government's plans, which are very interesting to say the least, if we just very briefly stay with the Catholic Church again, I imagine Catholics like yourself, traditional or conservative, I shouldn't say conservative, traditionalist probably, you said yourself pre-Vatican too.
Yeah.
The fact that the Church, apart from one or two courageous priests, the Catholic Church in Ireland hasn't covered itself in glory in terms of sticking up for the rights of its parishioners to attend Mass.
Oh, no. And that, again, is shocking. I mean, we did have a priest who came out and said, I will not succumb to a pagan government. And I'll give you a little anecdotal story myself, Richie. I went into church because it's open to sit and do your own personal worship. And I saw what I considered to be a really tragic sight, a person sitting there in a face mask, on their own. At this point, they were on their own. Obviously, I was in there too. But I felt compelled to say, do you really have such little faith that you fear you will be harmed in the house of God? And the response was, I'll do what I'm told. And I said, but that's not from God. So we have all succumbed to the government. The government is God now. I mean, it's the communist communitarian dream where we're living now. We worship, you know, on the altar of your NHS or our health service executive. And it's, you know, every night we sit at the television and wait for our chief medical officer to make his pronouncements on what we are allowed to do the next day. It's absolutely crazy. So yes, Richie, to get to your point, it hasn't covered itself and glory at all. It is meekly rolled over and submitted to all the diktats of this government that has proven itself time and time again to be anti-life, to be immoral, to be unethical. And, you know, I could do, you know, rounds with you on how to show how could it possibly have our best interests at heart, given the litany of abuses and issues that it's had over the years. So yes, and just to on the subject of the Catholic Church, and again, I'm not Catholic bashing, so I don't want your listeners to think that I'm on a vendetta against it. I'm not. I'm sad. I'm absolutely sad. But yesterday I just saw that the Vatican has entered into a global alliance, Richie, with Rothschild, Rockefeller, Ford, MasterCard, Bank of America, etc., etc., to form a new council for inclusive capitalism.
Yeah.
In other words, to create a more inclusive, sustainable and trusted economic system. So let me translate all that nonsense for you. That means they're totally signed up to Agenda 2030, totally signed up to the Great Reset and the technocratic dystopian future that is being planned for us. They want to chuck capitalism as we understand it and have it now. And I'm not saying it's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but in this reset, there's no sort of way of trying to rectify or make good what is bad about the capitalist system we have. Oh no, it's chucking it out and replacing with a resource-based system of technocracy. And our Pope and the Vatican is fully on board
right behind
this. And he has just said, you know, I saw it in one of the Twitter feeds, he is renouncing individualism, which, again, you know, I don't wish to sort of confound that with sort of Freemasonic liberty, equality and fraternity. But what it says is that the individual rights are secondary to the collective. So in other words, if it's you're deemed a public health risk or I'm a public health risk, Richie, which, you know, by stealth we effectively are, given our emergency health legislation, because we're asymptomatic and therefore we are potential biohazards. Therefore, our rights are, you know, secondary. And that's how they would, you know, move forward with a sort of a concept of mandatory vaccination. But again, that's getting into the vaccine discussion. So, yes, no, it has not covered itself in glory. It lets us down again and again and again. What can I say to you?
Fiona Marie Flanagan is our guest. She's live on the line from Dublin. I know you know who she is. Follow her on Twitter, by the way. Fiona is an academic, a social commentator and a pro-life activist. You, it might have been something you tweeted out, because I know as a commentator and as a regular broadcaster, I know you pay close attention to what goes on in the media on this side of the Irish Sea.
Oh, yes.
So you do,
yes.
Right?
So I lived in the UK half my life.
You did, of course. Yeah. I think you told me that before. I, listening to RTE Radio 1 today, listening to Midwest Radio, I think, as well, first time I spent so much time listening to the Irish broadcast media. You said something recently, I think, along the lines of that it's far worse in Ireland than it is in the UK. And I didn't know whether you were right or wrong, but you're right. Listening to the Claire Byrne show today, listening to one or two local radio shows, I've never heard so much blatant, naked propaganda in all my life. This vaccine is great. Don't think or imagine it isn't. It's perfect. It's great. You have to take it. You have to tell the person standing next to you to take it. We will not tolerate anybody who doesn't take it. It's astonishing. You're right there. It really is as bad as that.
Oh, no, they're monsters. You know, there's no other word that I can use to describe them. And there's no angle to try and even get in to get an alternative viewpoint. I mean, we have a lady on News Talk, Dr. Kira Kelly, and the furthest we can get is questioning the lockdown. You know, at this point, remember we spoke about it last time, that there's a little bit of traction, a little bit of movement on the lockdown, whether it's necessary to go to all these levels and to do X, Y, and Z. But that's as far as we will ever get it. And nobody is questioning the vaccine on mainstream radio or television or in the newspapers. It's just a no-go area. They're all fully on board. And as you say, you know, you are anathema if you even raise any element of doubt about whether this is a rational, sensible thing to be doing to the public at large.
And I was listening with great interest. It's in the Irish Mirror today. I talked about it a bit earlier on. The gentleman in Ahamore in Mayo, Donal, who runs Eileen's Bar, talking about how devastating lockdown has been on rural communities. You and I live in urban areas, and it's been very difficult for us and for our friends and our families as well, obviously. But he put a real... I don't know, he put a marker down, I think, for me as to what has happened in rural areas. He talked about high rates of suicide, desolation, desperation, and how, you know, tonight if the Gardaí came into his bar to close him down, so be it, he was going to open up anyway. And he's gone to the lengths of buying testing kits. Desperate stuff, really, you know, probably the last thing he wants to do. I don't know if you've been following that story, Fiona, but that's, I don't know, it kind of crystallizes everything that's going on in my country, I think.
Oh, no, it does. Yes, I am familiar with that story. And our hearts go out to all of these small businesses and publicans, and especially rural Ireland. I mean, you know, I would sit with colleagues and friends to think about this, try and analyse it. And we're all on the same page, mostly, you know, broadly speaking. And we'd scratch our heads as to why there hasn't been more of a movement in Ireland, especially against this. And the only conclusion that we could come to is the money hasn't run out yet. And the bribes and the, you know, under the table, undisclosed advance payments to shut up, basically, are still ongoing. And, you know, when you say about desolation and suicides, yes, I'm hearing more about them myself, even, you know, on the grapevine and anecdotally. And, you know, to the point that for me personally, I was very despondent a couple of weeks ago about this because, you know, and I don't wish to sort of paint a complete downer, but I can see what's coming into next year. And in my view, it's not pretty at all. In fact, you know, it'll be very, very challenging for the best of us. But on a plus note, there are such good people here, and I've been blessed to be introduced to them, and they've, you know, come into contact with them, and I'm part now, and again, this isn't a plug as such, Richie,
plug away.
Set up an Irish, it's all voluntary, so there's no, you know, money to be made on this, Irish Council for Human Rights, which is chaired by a barrister called Tracy O'Mahony. And the objective was, because we've seen human rights and civil liberties and the right to work, which is what you're referring to, really, and, you know, all that entails. being eroded, and people are just not rising up against it. So this little organisation, we've set it up to defend and promote and really strengthen these rights. And the first prong would be those small businesses. So we are hoping against hope that, that people like that publican, you know, in rural Ireland would approach this council for help, for guidance, because there are barristers on it, doctors on it. I'm on it as these kind of economists, so I'll probably be of absolutely no use to
you'll
them whatsoever.
Be of use. You'll be of use.
But nevertheless, you know, I'm in there, which I'm grateful for. And it gives me a sense of hope, too, that, you know, there are some of us who are not going to lie down, Richie, and take this and roll over. There are people still fighting. And I hope to goodness that this, the similar things are happening in the UK and elsewhere. Because we can't just let this roll over and let our tummies be tickled. And yet you lose everything you've ever worked for.
Everything you've ever worked for. And next year, are you certain, as we are kind of certain here, that the vaccine will be your passport to some semblance of the way things were before March 2020? Is that how you feel it's going to be? Is it coercion, Fiona Cumann?
Yes, I feel it is coercion. I feel that the public are being duped again, because they've been duped all year, into believing that this vaccine will get them back to normal. And I think my impression is that the media are allowing them to go along with this, because anyone I engage in conversation with and I sort of probe them a little bit, I'm not trying to tell them what to think, but I'm trying to understand what their thought process is. They all believe, oh, we'll be back to normal. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then I say, but you do know that we'll still have masks and social distancing and lockdowns. And they go, go away. They don't realise this. So yes, Richie, I believe we are going to witness in Ireland, starting tomorrow, the most incredible campaign of propaganda and coercion to take this vaccine. But at the same time, our CMO, Chief Medical Officer Holohan, is putting out into the public domain, oh, you know, I anticipate a huge number of cases, ICUs under pressure already, deaths are rising. So they're plumbing up, they're setting the scene for a lockdown in January. And to my mind, the only debate is whether they go full on or whether they sort of, you know, ease us into it maybe a few days
at a time.
Fiona,
can I ask you before I forget, on this, in the UK, we know that our hospitals are no more busy now than they were at exactly this point in the last 3 to 4 years. Are those figures, I'm putting you on the spot now, and you don't need to know this, and if you don't, it doesn't matter. But I wonder, would it be comparable in Ireland? What's the bed occupancy like in Ireland compared to last year, I wonder? I bet you it's probably the same, I bet you.
Probably, well, again, I can't give you
fair enough, yeah,
some figures, but again, my hunch is probably the same.
Yeah.
You know, we had Gemma O'Doherty recently managed to get herself into the Mater Hospital in Dublin, or the Mater, as my husband says.
he's posh, he's
Mater,
posh.
Mater, Pater, he has a go at me. But absolutely empty. I mean, in terms of where she was able to film, empty. You know, so procedures are ongoing, because I know from talking to people that they're getting their cataracts done, you know, they're getting to see X, Y and Z. But of course, there's a massive backlog. So no, Richie, my hunch is no, it would be no worse. And in fact, last year and the year before, because I was there with my father, God bless him, on trolleys in corridors when he was taken in through A&E.
Yeah.
And it was mayhem.
Right.
Even then. So I have been there myself at the coalface with my elderly father, who was suffering from pneumonia this time 2 years ago. And we were overnight in the corridors.
Overnight in the corridors in the 21st century. Because June Rain, who is the MHRA top woman here in the UK, that's the UK's regulatory body that decides whether a medicine is safe or not. Rain said a couple of very interesting things yesterday. One of the things she said was, we're going to be moving to a preventative form of medicine, and that vaccines will play a huge role in the national infrastructure. And when she said that yesterday on live telly, I went looking, and it didn't take me long to find that vaccines are in development for everything that you can think of. for everything, every ailment. And you talked earlier on about 2030. I've listened to you with great interest on YouTube. You're fabulous when you do those shows in Ireland with those broadcasters, whose names I will mention before the end of the programme. Dave Cullen and others that you've spoken to. You've gotten into this yourself. This is where the social credit model that they want to introduce comes in. They will tell us that it's not good enough to be unwell, that being unwell will be almost sinful. Therefore, if we say we've got a vaccine against any type of cancer, against diabetes, against obesity, against asthma, against the nitchy knee, against earwax, if we've got a vaccine against anything, you'll have to take it. Otherwise, well, you're a bad citizen. Now, she didn't say all of that, but she said we're moving to a more preventative way of doing medicine where vaccines will be very important in the national infrastructure. Jeez, I'm not going to blaspheme. I mean, that's where it's heading, right? I would imagine.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It is heading that way. And in fact, if you look at the, you know, all of this, again, Agenda 2030, Sustainable Development Goals, technocracy, which is the system that we have. So forget the politics. There will be no more politics anymore. Politicians will have a minimal role, if any, going forward. Everything will be run by the white coats, the technocrats, on a resource-based method where resources will be allocated to us according to what these technocrats believe is our need. So it'll be based on an algorithm, Richie, that they will determine based on your weight, height, age, you know, medical profile, what calorific content you need, what medications you're on, etc. And you're quite right in terms of the vaccinations going forward, because of the Sustainable Development Goals, in other words, the technocratic system, it's all the same, all in the one. Most of those Sustainable Development Goals involve vaccinations. So this COVID-19 vaccine, as I read it, is just the opening. It's the opening salvo on coercing or making mandatory vaccinations for absolutely anything you can think of. And you're correct, Richie. Those of us remaining, when this system actually goes live, will be forced to take them to be able to draw on our universal basic income and to be able to maintain enough social credits to be able to consume the resources or the energy that they have allocated to us. So medicine or medical care as we know it will cease to exist. So a GP to go face to face will become a thing of the past. At best, you'll have an artificial intelligence system that you'll log into. So it'll be telemedicine. And, you know, I hear you about the nanotechnology aspect of the vaccinations, and I can't comment on it to any degree at this point. But I do know that down the tracks, they're going to use artificial intelligence and, you know, aided by the 5G system to be able to monitor our vital signs and cellular structure using sensors so that they'll know, Richie, you know, you've been a bad boy. You haven't taken your meds or your blood pressure's a bit low. And you've said this yourself.
You're right.
And you're absolutely right.
Do you know what? Do you know what it'll be? It'll be your visit with your GP will not be a person. It'll be an AI program. So you'll hold your iPad or your Galaxy tablet or your phone in front of your face. And as for the nanotechnology, not only are the patents there, but these little robots exist. These robots that can only be seen under an electron microscope. They plan on injecting these into our bodies. They've already done this in trials to move around the body, dispensing medicine where it needs to be dispensed, and also diagnosing certain things, feeding it all back to a mainframe, a central computer. None of this is conspiracy theory. It's all fact. It's all fact. And can I just say this? Go back to the media again. Listening to Radio 1 this morning and the Claire Byrne show, tragic example of the media again refusing to do its job. The Limerick Independent TD, Richard O'Donoghue, very eloquently explained why he wouldn't have the vaccine. And at the very end of his comment, he gave a comment, not to Claire Byrne, but to one of her reporters. He said one of his main concerns was the fact that Ireland, like everybody else, has indemnified Pfizer and BioNTech, meaning that they don't have any risk at all if something goes wrong. And the second he said that, she moved to speaking to Gabriel Scally, who's, I think he's based over here these days, but he's an Irish epidemiologist. And she said to him, address those concerns there. She said, the concerns we've heard from Richard O'Donoghue. And she mentioned, the very last one she said was indemnifying Pfizer. And of course, he wouldn't touch it. He didn't answer that, and she didn't pursue him to get him to answer it. That should wake everybody up to that, shouldn't it? Imagine, here, take this medicine, and we've given a get-out-of-jail-free card to the manufacturers.
Yes. You know, absolutely. And I'm sorry to say this, and I sound harsh, but ignorance at this point in time is a choice. OK, now, obviously, I'll leave out children, sort of early teenagers and the elderly and those with disabilities. But the rest of us, Richie, have absolutely no excuse in not researching or understanding what's going on, and especially for a vaccination. And I feel I have to say it, and sadly I do, because we're in the climate now where, you know, we're labelled, but I was never anti-vaccine. I am fully vaccinated, so are my children. I don't mind saying this. It wasn't until the HPV, but this COVID-19 vaccine has completely opened my eyes, and it's through this that I've done the research, and my friends have helped me as well. A lot of them were way further down the line than I was. And you know what I'd say to you, Richie? For me, it's a simple case of a risk assessment on whether or not I would take this. Because looking at it, we have the data on COVID-19, the virus, as we understand it. And I can attach a probability based upon the data to myself, my health situation, and my likelihood of contracting the virus and my likelihood of surviving the virus. I can put an actual probability on this. But with this vaccine, based upon what we know, it is uncertain. So therefore, I cannot attach any probability to the likelihood of adverse events, etc., on this vaccine. So as a rational individual, forget anything you think about, you know, not being anti-vax or big pharma. As a rational individual, I would elect not to have the vaccine. Absolutely. At this particular point in time. Just looking at the probability distributions, end of. So it, you know, I go through rounds of this with my friends, the awake friends. The people who are taking this vaccine, Richie, they're educated, they're intelligent, they hold down serious jobs in big industries, and they're off there happily rolling up the sleeves to take this vaccine. It beggars belief. I just do not understand it.
Is there anything in the fact that, look, I don't put intelligence on the table. Leave intelligence out of it. But if you've done okay in your lifetime, and your parents have done okay, and the state has never really kind of knocked on your door, does that make it? I'm being very simplistic here. Might that not make it more difficult for you to accept that something very nefarious is going on? Is there anything in that? You know, if you've done okay, your parents have done okay, you've always been comfortable, never had any issues, you've never had the police around, you've never had anything to do with the government, maybe it's more difficult for you to contemplate that there are people that would do you grave harm. I don't know, maybe I'm talking to me.
No, you're not, actually. No, you're not. And it's funny you should say that. But again, a conversation I had was exactly that, about another individual who, just like you've said, has done very well, business person, you know, worked hard, made a decent living, and cannot get their heads to the fact that there could be a wider agenda at play here that may not have their best interest at heart, shall I put this euphemistically? Yes. That is a hard nut to crack. And for people out there, again, if you start saying this, oh, you know, you're just a conspiracy tinfoil, you know, the usual old labels get thrown at you. So, yes, you're dealing with a lot of cognitive dissonance. But the fact that this, OK, assuming as we do that this thing has just been started at the beginning of the year. Now, you know, I have my question marks over that, but that's a different story. But assuming that this vaccine has started its development early this year after the pandemic was declared. I mean, what in the world? 9 months. When usually it should take 9 years.
Yeah.
And at this stage, you know, I'm very close friends with, you know, Professor Dolores Cahill, as you know her. She's appeared on your show. She's been, and others who have cautioned, seriously cautioned against this vaccine.
What happens when somebody like yourself, when you speak to your friends, I'm sure your friends not the friends you've met now through the independent media, but your lifelong friends who are happy to take the vaccine. And I'm sure they're as articulate and as intelligent as you, Fiona. And when you say, look at this lady in UCD with all these letters after her name, she's saying we need to have a good, hard look at this and take a moment of pause. What response do you get then? Is it a case of, well, she's on her own and there's 50 doctors on the HSE?
Yes.
What response is that?
Yes. Yes, because right. It's been democratized, because it is a democracy. It's a consensus now. Science is no more, you know, a proper scientific pursuit where you conduct experiments, you look at empirical evidence and the results speak for themselves. No, it's a democracy. So, you've got like for every Dolores Cahill's, you can find out, you know, another 20 who would go against her and go along with the consensus view. And that is what the people that you've spoken to, you know, my sort of old colleagues or cohorts would align with, and that they would always pull up the other evidence, the consensus.
And of course the annoying thing is the I think around about 3,000 or more scientific men and women signed the Great Barrington Declaration, so probably, and this is a total guess now, there's probably more scientists in the world on the side of Dolores than there would be on the side of the likes of Chris Whitty or anybody. Now that's just a guess, that, but how quickly thousands of them signed up to say the lockdown is killing more people, herd immunity needs to happen naturally as it always does. I'd say the logical scientists far outweigh the bought and paid for ones, but it's just a guess.
Yes, I think there's certainly momentum gathering. And, you know, I speak to people at various places around the world at this point, and I do get a lot of stories about even within government in certain countries, there is suspicion, serious suspicion. Sorry, it's my cat. But again,
I love it.
Just come into the room. But they're all under control. They're all bought off. They're all afraid. They're all their livelihoods. I'm not excusing it, by the way. I'm just saying that this is
reality.
You know, this is the position, and they will not say anything. So, and especially in a country like Ireland, where the corruption is rife, you can really, really railroad, like the legal system is co-opted, the medical system is co-opted. It's incredible, and that you can do it, and the tentacles can pull you in so that you'll only have two lone independent TDs out there saying anything sensible.
Do me a favour, come back on the show in January, will you? And before you go, you can have the final word, of course. You know, I went to Ring on Ryan. I went to the Gaeltacht only one summer. And there was a time when my Gaeilge was very, very good. It's diabolical now. But I have to say, obviously, nulla cunna guit to you and your family. Look
thank
after
you
yourself.
Nulla cunna guit.
Nulla cunna guit, that's right. Nulla cunna guit. Yeah.
I went to Ross Muck.
Oh, did you? Ah, right. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, but for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about in the US and places like that, there are regions of our country where the Irish language is spoken as the primary language. Thank God they still exist. And some of us were sent to some of these places in summers. I enjoyed it. I never saw it as a chore, but anyway. Final word, if you want a final word, Fiona, it's yours. And again, thanks for the effort that you make to come on the show and spend your time with us and give us your valuable time, but also for making the programmes you do and trying to reach people. There's two different types of people who try to reach people. There are people who scream at them and get frustrated and abuse them. And then there's academic-minded people like you, whom I love listening to. And your approach to people who don't understand this, I think it's an absolute example for everybody else. Final word, and I meant what I said. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Oh, bless you, Richie, and to you. All I'll say is to everybody out there, enjoy this Christmas. My goodness, hold your family close, treasure the moments, make memories, make it the happiest you can, and brace yourselves.
Thanks, Fiona. All the best for now.
All right, listen, God bless. You take care, Richie.
You
talk
too.
Soon.
The brilliant Fiona Marie Flanagan, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Dublin. This evening, Dublin's fair city. The time 4 minutes past the hour. You'll find Fiona, by the way, on Twitter. She is at Fiona M. Flanagan 1. At Fiona M. Flanagan 1. Thousands of followers there. Always got something interesting to say. At Fiona M. Flanagan 1. Before I go any further, CC has asked me to say hello to him or her. Is it him or is it her? So I said, it's one of those afternoons people are saying, oh, Richie, say hello to me. I'm happy to say hello to you. So how you see, before we get headlines, let me plug two things. Tonight at 9 o'clock, I'll be the guest of Hayden Hewitt on his Trigger Warning programme, which is a terrific programme that has gotten even better recently, as he's had a series of interviews with very, very interesting men and women, very well-known men and women from a wide variety of fields and backgrounds. He invited me to take part in it. I agreed. You need to go to youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. Look at my Twitter feed later. I'll put a tweet out and a link to it, 9 o'clock UK time. It'll be a very serious discussion. I'm sure there'll be one or two laughs in it as well. But do check that out tonight if you like. I'm looking forward to it. And on Christmas morning at 10 o'clock UK time, Christmas morning, December 25th, I'll be with you for Christmas Morning Melodies between 10 and midday. I will have a bottle of Bacardi at the ready. The future Mrs. Allen will be sitting alongside me with the dogs. It'll be nice and cosy. We'll have a drink and we'll have a chat and I'll play some really nice music, and it will not be exclusively Christmas tunes, because by then you'll be sick of them. I'll have some lovely songs from yesteryear. We'll have a bit of a chat and I promise we'll have one or two surprises as well. That is coming up on Christmas Day. How about that, eh? I know. The BBG, the gift that keeps on giving. FSN headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. The US Food and Drug Administration is meeting to decide whether to approve Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. The European Union has laid out contingency plans in case Brexit talks fail to make headway by Sunday. And America's federal death row will stage another execution today. 40-year-old Brandon Bernard will be put to death in the US government's prison at Terre Haute in Indiana.
There is nothing I've campaigned against more in my life than capital punishment. It's an abomination, a fucking abomination. News today that Donald Trump wants to expedite the executions of four people before he leaves office. How could you call yourself a Christian and support the strapping somebody down on a bed and killing them with a lethal injection of chemicals? How could you say that you're a Christian? One of Jesus' warriors. I don't know. I don't know how you could say that. I'll be back with you very shortly after this message. Gerald Celente will be with me live from Kingston in New York very soon.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, Gerald Celente live on the Richie Allen Radio Show for the final time this year, talking about trends in the news 2021. Don't miss him, he's a great, great guy. He'll be with me after this from Christopher Cross, the BBG, not the BBC. Once in your life, marvellous Arthur's theme there from Christopher Cross, who was unwell of late. I saw an interview he did on 60 Minutes, and I think he's in better shape now. Thanks for that. Fabrizio, maybe, was it on Twitter there? I have a tweet to read and then it just dives off the screen. Gerald is due to be on with me at quarter past the hour, not 10 past. It just occurred to me. And he's an immaculate, impeccable timekeeper, so he is the man. So we've got a couple of minutes to kill. Thanks for all those tweets, by the way. Hi to David La Antenna, how you doing? Hi to T. Bryson, how you doing? T. A lot of comment on Kay Burley. I suppose I better mention that again, in case you don't know. Sky News has decided to suspend Kay Burley for 6 months for breaching COVID-19 guidelines. Last Saturday evening, Kay, as we call her, the ginger ninja here, went out on the town. She got the handbags and the glad rags and off she went for her 60th birthday party. She had a couple of her Sky News mates and some of her friends with her. And apparently, somewhere along the way, she was there with too many people from too many households. Or something along those lines. And then they all went back to Kay's. As you do. That's what you do, right? You go out for a few beers and you just have too many. And then you have the brilliant idea to bring lots of people back to your place. Something, of course, you regret wholeheartedly the following day. They all piled in back to Kay's. On Monday, Kay did her programme as usual. She was absent on Tuesday, Wednesday and absent this morning. A variety of people filling in for her. I think it was Stephen Dixon today. And it was announced this afternoon by Sky themselves. It's been picked up by everybody that Kay has been suspended for 6 months. And she's not very popular, Kay Burley, especially with people in independent media circles. They see Kay as a bit of a she-wolf or a witch or the devil, Rupert Murdoch's mouthpiece. I have a different kind of outlook on Kay Burley, really. I know what Kay Burley is. She's an establishment propagandist. And any presenter presenting for Sky or BBC television or even the national radio stations, they are there to convey to you the establishment narrative, to convince you of it. They're not there to challenge it. We know that now. So Kay, in her own way, isn't any worse than anybody else. She had a very interesting career beginning in local newspapers in Wigan. And was very feisty, kind of fought her way up in a very male-dominated. And listen, I'm no feminist now. Don't you hate those guys who call themselves feminists, don't you? Well, I do anyway. So she'd have been fairly tough, would have been determined to make it, and did make it, made her way onto Breakfast Television, done a bit for ITV for a while, ended up on Sky then, became the darling of Rupert Murdoch himself very early on. And as she points out on her Twitter, on her Twitter account, she's done more live telly than anybody else. That's about right. There's nothing she won't do, Kay. I've seen her spend 2-3 days at the scene of a terrorist attack. I know you might think a false flag terror attack. Yes, probably. I've seen her do that. I've seen her spend all day at royal events, royal weddings, royal births, mingling with crowds. Kay's a tough old cookie, you know. It doesn't excuse the things she's done in the past and the way she's conducted herself, but she's human at the end of the day. And this whole COVID pandemic is a farce anyway. The reason I don't have a lot of sympathy for her, I think it's wrong that anybody should be suspended. I think it's wrong for anybody to call for anybody else to lose their job. We should never do that, in my opinion, no matter how much we might be cheesed off with somebody. We shouldn't do that. But, as I mentioned earlier on, Kay and Beth Rigby from Sky News have led the cheerleading for the lockdown. Pathetically, dreadfully, incomprehensibly. They really have. More than anybody. They've been absolute cheerleaders for lockdown. Loving lockdown. Loving it, the two of them. And they took great, they got great joy out of going after Dominic Cummings. Dominic Cummings is probably the biggest arsehole that ever walked the face of the earth. After Boris Johnson. No doubt about it. Neil Ferguson, what a spoon. What a spanner Neil Ferguson is. That dickhead. With his apocalyptic predictions. Oh, millions are going to die if you don't do stuff. Nonsense. Crazy man. And of course, he went off and he had his fling with his floozy. Didn't he? And they were delighted. And they put the boot in. So yes, it is karma, in a way, that Ms. Burley, currently unattached, gents, if you're interested. She's a fine figure of a woman for 60. She's got a grown son, so he won't be much of a problem to you. Okay. Yeah, she's off now till June, apparently. Off till June. I must check my emails. No sign of Gerald yet. Could be overrunning another interview. Pretty busy at this time of year is Gerald Celente. No email yet, so tell you what we'll do. Is he there? He's not there. So I'll take another tune And while I do that, I will remind you, as I have an opportunity to do so, 9 p.m. this evening, youtube.com/triggerwarningTV, I will be with none other than Hayden Hewitt on his programme. 9 o'clock, youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. How's that? All righty. I think the great Gerald might be there now. Let's get him on the line and give him a massive welcome, the sort of welcome a man of his esteem is entitled to. This will be the last time we hear from him this year, sadly. He's a great bloke, a top, top man, and he's been gracing my radio and television programmes for many, many years. And when I was a nobody, and I'm still a nobody, of course I'm a nobody, but way back when I started doing independent radio in Spain, a guy with the profile of Gerald Celente, he didn't need to be speaking to me, but he did speak to me and gave me loads of time, and I'll be forever grateful for that. The Trends Journal is a must read. I'll say no more because no more needs to be said. Go to trendsresearch.com to speak about the craziness of the current paradigm and to look ahead to 2021. Live from Kingston, the one and only publisher of the Trends Journal, Gerald Celente himself. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Ah, thank you for having me. Well, physically, I'm fine. You know, a lot of good things are happening. But there's a very, very sadness in my spirit and my soul when I see what's going on around the world and all the lives that are being destroyed and how our freedom has been robbed from us in front of our faces and how so many people believe what they are told and do what they are told. And here we are in the Christmas spirit, and Satan Claus has come to town. You're not allowed to visit your relatives. You will not travel to see anybody. You will have limited people in your home. You will not sing Christmas carols. You will not celebrate the birth of the Prince of Peace. I am in control. I am your governor. I am your mayor. I am your chancellor. I am your prime minister. I am some piece of satanic crap telling you what to do, and all you people obey. Yes, master. Yes, master. We're just plantation workers on the global plantation of Slavelandia. We will do what we tell you. We will do what you order us to do. All aboard, next train to Auschwitz. That's how I feel.
My previous guest is a great political commentator from Dublin called Fiona Marie Flanagan. And like yourself, she's a very spiritual person and has gotten a lot from her life, in her life, from the teachings of Jesus. And I was asking her about the lack of pushback from the church, from ministers, ordained men and women. It's a stupid question because you've given me the answer. But it's terribly disappointing, isn't it, that men and women of the cloth, men of the cloth, didn't come forward and say, no, no, there is a more divine, a more superior authority. We won't close the churches. We won't stop our flock from congregating and meeting one another and spending time together. Where were they? Where are they, Gerald?
Where are they? Maybe they're, you know, if it's the Catholic Church, maybe they're out with a bunch of boys. I mean, look what they've done. Look, I grew up Catholic.
Yeah.
And my life was destroyed for a lot of years, and it probably screwed me up for life by being assaulted by a nun. Sister Marie Rosaire, yeah. Oh, yeah, Jesus would have loved you for this. She grabs me by my little blue tie. I'm in the fifth grade. And she starts bam, 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 smacking the hell out of me, perforating my middle ear and breaking my eardrum.
Jesus.
Because, and I start screaming, why are you hitting? My head exploded. And this goes a long story. I mean, it's really screwed me up. And she said I was speaking during prayers. And it wasn't, you know, I was daydreaming like always, you know, you had to start the morning off, you know, in the name of the Father. The church does not represent Christ or the teachings. It's another establishment organization, as far as I see. Where are they? Look at all the wars that go on. You don't talk, you hear them condemning them. Where are they now, not talking about what's going on in Yemen, what's going on in Ethiopia, what's going on? You know, they love the Iraq War. Maybe you like the Afghan War better. No, I know the Vietnam War was your kind of war. No, the Korean War. One after what church? It's a joke. It's a joke as the political system. I was the toughest kid, Richie. And I'm a Napolitano, grew up in the Bronx, right? A little tiny kid, always the shortest kid in my class. So I'm the guy that they first beat up or tried to. I was the toughest kid in school. And that's why she beat me up. Because I get in a fight with kids when we moved to Yonkers, which was, you know, upscale for the Bronx. And I, you know, as a kid, you know, I knew how to fight. And then the parents would complain that Gerald beat my son up. So then this nun left me back. So I became the stupidest kid in the school. What they've done in society, you don't have to learn how to fight. It's in the human spirit. I was a little kid. I know how to fight. But they took it out of me, and they take it out of everybody. I didn't get back into fighting until I got into close combat. And that changed my life again. And by the way, the top close combat person in America who writes in our Trends Journal, we have survivalism. Brad Steiner just passed away this past Saturday. And All of us are just heartbroken, devastated by it. This is a man that changed the life of so many people. And so you think about it. You got to learn how to fight. You have to learn how to fight. Oh, to bring back the animal spirit. Not the animal spirit, the human spirit. They've taken it away from us. Look how the people are. They're not fighters. Put on that mask. Stand 1 meter away while I say 1.3 meters away. Hey, I'm in the United States, 6 feet. Look what they're doing to us. Look how the people are behaving. Look how they're obeying. So few are standing up and fighting for freedom, peace, and justice.
When that happened to you when you were younger, that was a criminal assault. That's assault and battery. We'd call that grievous bodily harm in the UK. You'd go to prison for that. I'll ask you a question I think I might know the answer to, because my grandfather, now you're much younger than my grandfather, but he was not sexually...
Probably not a lot.
Oh, no, you know, you're 20 years younger, I think, than my granddad was very, very senior. And he went to a Christian Brothers school. And luckily enough, he wasn't sexually abused. They abused a lot of kids sexually, but they battered him. And I asked him the question, I'll ask you, when the nun did that to you, which is just obscene and unimaginable, what did your mum and dad think of that? And did anybody do anything?
It was terrible, you know, but this is going back, I'm going like 1954.
Yeah.
And it was a different time, you know. And I had an older brother, you know, you look up to your older brother. The reason I went to Catholic school, nobody in my family went to Catholic school, was they wanted to get me disciplined. My brother said I needed discipline. So I went there, you know, because they couldn't control me. I was, you know, I ran away from kindergarten and the first grade. And actually I went to, in the Bronx rather, and I went to actually it was PS 76. And I think about it, the spirit of 76. Second day in kindergarten, time to take a nap. The first day they said time to take a nap. All the kids laid down, put their hands up. And I wasn't tired. I was taking naps every day. And it's Gerald, you have to take a nap. The next day, she says, time to take a nap. She turned around. Poof, I ran out. I crossed the Boston Post Road in the Bronx. That was the major artery the day between Boston and New York. They took me out of school because they know I'd be dead. If that was today, they had me shot up with drugs. And by the way, so what happened is, you know, in those days, you know, they got away with this stuff. What happened? Yeah. I ran home. My head was splitting open. And in those days, you know, we had a big family and we didn't have a washer or a dryer. My mother used to, may they all rest in peace, they'd send the laundry out to a laundry man, a big bag, bags of laundry, and then she'd get them back wet and they'd hang them out in the clothesline. Anyway, I run home. My mother didn't have a car. And the laundry man, they drove me to the hospital, St. John's Hospital. And this guy looks in my ear, and even then they had interns from overseas. I'm going back to the early 50s. And he said to my mother, I'm a crybaby. There was nothing wrong with me. And my head is splitting open. And I'm crying and crying. And she knew, you know, because I wasn't a crybaby at all. And they called in an eye, ear, and nose specialist. I don't forget the guy's name, Dr. Rock. And he said to the other guy, he said, the reason you don't see anything is because there's nothing left. She blew out my entire middle ear and eardrum, blew it right open. And that affected me for so many years. And so what they're doing now is the same thing. They are beating us brutally. And the people, look at a little child growing up and being afraid to be hugging and kissing. Look at young people at the prime of their sexual lives growing up. No dancing, no kissing, no hugging, no squeezing, no loving, no caring. Get back in your house. Get back in your house. I'll tell you what to do. I'll tell you where to stay. I'll tell you where you could go. This is satanic. It's a satanic Christmas.
You make a great juxtaposition there, I think. My parents and your parents, maybe not your parents specifically, but they were enraptured by the clergy. They could do no wrong, even when they were doing terrible things wrong. And we're seeing that mirror today. Governments are doing things that are blatantly satanic, to use your description. I agree with it. Terrible stuff. And yet people, rather than say no, is kind of like they're saying, well, give us some more of it, or okay, we'll try and be better. You know, you beat a child often enough, a child starts wondering, how can I be better to avoid the beatings? And I know you've gotten into this in the journal, and here we are now. It's and this is a big trend for you going forwards, isn't it? How people might or might not react to what's coming next year in 2021. Because I get the sense of reading you in the journal, watching the brilliant trends in the news, which is a fantastic production, and you know I love that, is that we're at the beginning of something here, not at the end of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is if you were to write, you know, Richie, you and I, let's sit down and we're going to write a script for a grade B movie. We're going to start it off like this. We're going to scare the hell out of people, tell them that there's a bad virus coming. And the first thing they're going to do is to run into the supermarkets and buy toilet paper. Yeah, come on, Gerald. What are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
You really got to be a crap head to think that would be the first thing that people would do, was to fight each other over toilet paper. All right? That's how bad this story is. And it just keeps getting worse. Look at the people that are destroying our... And look at it. The streets are dead. The streets are dead. They're dead.
Even now.
They're dead.
Even now. Isn't that amazing? With 2 weeks to go to Christmas Day, nothing happening in Kingston. Nothing in Brooklyn.
The whole area. New York City, Midtown is a ghost town. You want to see homeless people? Hey, you want to get robbed? Take the subway. How about homicides going up all over the world? Except in China, they're wide open. And that's one of our top trends for 2021. China, the 21st century. And the 20th century was the American century. The 21st century is the Chinese century. You know, they've taken over. Look, we've even become taken the Chinese way. We used to make fun of them for having to wear those masks all the time.
Yeah,
and of course,
yeah.
The reason they wore the masks is because of the filthy air. Of only 1.5 million of them die each year of air pollution. But we won't talk about the poisons they put in the air, the poisons in our food, the poisons in our water, the poisons in the earth, all the artificial colorings, flavors, and crap. The GMOs that we eat. No, none of that stuff is killing you, Salenti. It is the COVID. The COVID. And I will rob you of your freedom. I will steal from you joy. You will not have liberty. I am in charge. Heil Hitler. Heil Merkel. Heil Johnson. How Conti Sanchez, one low life, piece of slimy garbage after another. I got little Andy Cuomo over here, the governor of New York. You want to look at an arrogant little boy.
Gangsta.
A little boy. A His daddy was governor. Like that other piece of gutless crap up there in Canada, Trudeau. Both little arrogant boys will be nobody if daddy wasn't there before you. So save your crap, Junior. That's who's destroying us. It's one big club, as George Carlin used to say, and you ain't in it.
Do you speculate?
The big club.
Do you speculate? Let me remind our listeners about trendsresearch.com. Gerald and his team have been accurately, uncannily, accurately predicting macroeconomic and geopolitical trends for years and years and years. Trendsresearch.com, subscribe to the journal. It's absolutely terrific. It's a must read. When you name these people, and you could have mentioned, and you would have done if I hadn't interrupted you, you could have mentioned Ursula von der Leyen, the EU Commission President now, Johnson is meeting her today, all of these people. I've never asked you this properly. What's in it for them? Are these people who push this agenda, do they really believe in what they're doing, or are they hopelessly compromised in one way or another? I've always wanted your opinion on that.
They're mentally ill people.
Are they?
They're mentally deranged people. They're sociopaths, psychopaths, pathological liars, egotists, narcissists. I was the assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate.
Yeah.
At 26 years old. When I see pictures of me and Ronald Reagan when I picked him up at the Chicago Hilton in 1976, I was 30 years old. I was the number two guy running a major trade association. He was our keynote speaker that night. I picked him up. We're getting a taxi cab in those days. 2 days before he's announcing he's running against Gerry Ford. Been with the Prince of Norway. Remember that guy Major over there? That minor Major over there?
Yeah.
I was a keynote speaker for USA Today when it was a big newspaper. And he was the other guy. I met him. I knew all these people. And I know what this scene looks like. These are the same people I hated in high school and college and that wanted to be class president and head of the student council. I'm not saying that about the Prince of Norway. He was a cool guy. But most of them in the political system, you know, they're garbage to me.
Is that what it is? Let me stay with this for a minute, because our listeners now will be glued to this because of who you are. I've never asked you this. So I speculate, and I am the first to put my hands up and say that I know very little. And when I speculate, it's not based on, you know, any great research. I often look at these guys and I think they're compromised in some way. I think, Jeffrey Epstein, I think he was blackmailing people. And I used to think that the likes of Boris Johnson, they're kept on the straight and narrow by more powerful people because of their compulsion for maybe child pornography or whatever. But you're saying something very interesting now. You're saying that these people are identifiable even when it's running for class president. They're almost sociopathic even then. They're hungry for power over other people. That's what you're saying.
That's it. It's again, I'm an American.
Yeah.
I'm born to be free. I don't need anybody telling me what to do. Go Google up that guy, or woman, whatever he is, she, who's the health secretary of Pennsylvania. Google in Rachel Levin, Levine. This guy, woman, he yelled at a guy, got mad at a reporter because he called him sir. This guy has about six chins. Smart guy. Then you Google up the health commissioner of Los Angeles County. And the last name is Ferrer, F-E-R-R-E-R, something like that. She's a ghost. I have an honorary doctorate from the National University of Health Sciences for the work I've done in complementary and integrative medicine. The first book I worked on, when this was, nobody was talking about this stuff, 1985, Natural Healing. It was a Warner book. I need some low-life piece of crap to tell me what to do to take care of my health. When I'm looking at these people, and by the way, we got one of my YouTube videos got banned from YouTube because I called it a COVID hysteria. And in the banning, they said that I must obey basically what local health officials and the World Health Organization recommend. I got to listen to some local health official, some little bureaucrat, some little probably stupid piece of crap that couldn't practice on their own because they're so damn bad. But boy, do they know how to suck up and bow down and take it so they could get a bureaucratic job from the government run by crooks, politicians. They're not worried about you being out of work. They steal your money in the name of taxes. They don't have to worry about paying their mortgages. They don't have to worry about eating. They don't have to worry about health care. They don't have to worry about anything. They get your money while you're out of work. We'll steal it any way we can. These are the people that are telling us what to do. I'm telling you, if people don't stand up now and fight for liberty, peace, and justice, we're dead. We need freedom.
Will they? Freedom. Will they? What will it take looking ahead to 2021? We've been discussing all day long some abominable statements made by health officials in this country. They want to move to a so-called preventative style of medicine where we'll be taking vaccines, whether we like it or not, for a lot of things all year round. They're moving away from giving people treatments, traditionally medicines, whatever, their operations. Now it's all going to be preventative in the future and people will be compelled to take all of that stuff. This is terrifying stuff. I don't know if it's Silent Green, all those movies we saw looking ahead to dystopian futures, horrible worlds. Is there anything that could happen, Gerald, that yes. would galvanize people?
Yes, and that's some of our top trends for 2021. One is anti-vax, anti-tax parties forming. Number two, and this is the biggest that we're looking at, is a new religion, a universal religion, one of freedom, peace, and justice. When you're looking at the protests going on around the world where they are going on to the minimum extent, one after another, they keep using the word freedom. People want their freedom back. And I believe it's about a third of the people that will fight. The majority doesn't count because they're sheep. They'll do what they're told. Very small number of that. Our greatest threat is not the politicians, but the COVID cops. These little boys and girls dressed up in their military drag playing tough when they got all their other tough low lives around them that are breaking people's chops for fighting for their freedom. They are the worst. Because if they weren't doing this, we wouldn't have these problems because people would say, take your rule and shove it.
Yeah.
And these little boys and girls playing politicians wouldn't stand up and fight for what they want you to do. As we'd say, you know, when you call these guys out, and I've done it before, you know, when you call somebody out, when they play tough with you, they don't know what to do. And in the Bronx, we'd say they wouldn't know whether to piss or shit.
Yeah,
and that's the truth. Oh, don't talk to me like that. Come over here. Come over here. And they'd run. And if you don't believe me, look, people, Google it up. Governor Murphy, New Jersey, women harassing. These Jersey girls call this governor out, him sitting there eating with his family, no masks on, everybody outside. Jersey's closed down. Just all the waterfront, the Jersey Shore, destroyed this summer. All small businesses gone, going down. And they called him out. You look at this guy's face, he sits there like a little coward. A little low-life piece of slimy coward crap. That's all they are. So those are the things that could change it. A new anti-vax, anti-tax party, and a church, a universal church of freedom, peace, and justice. And you could belong whatever God you believe in, Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, whoever, whatever God you believe in that believes in freedom, peace, and justice, this is a congregation. That's the only, that to me is the best way that I can see it happening.
Before I wish you a Merry Christmas and thank you for looking after us this year and for everything else that you do, my great friend and colleague Jean Ann asks me to ask you, this time next year, God willing, we still have a radio show here and the journal is still blazing a trail. What might it look like in December 2021, better or worse?
It's hard to say. It's going to be worse for most people. You know, what they're going to do, Richard, is they're going to, Richie, excuse me.
Thought my dad was talking to me. Granddad was talking to me there with the Richard.
They're going to make it seem like there's a recovery. And it's not going to be.
Right.
Just like if you're living in Argentina, you don't know you're in a depression, even though you feel it. They don't call it that. So they're going to keep calling it something else. Meanwhile, people's lives are being destroyed. They're being destroyed by the hundreds of millions. So they're going to make it seem like everything is getting better because they're going to look better in the numbers. But the only numbers that are going to look better are for the 1% or the 10%. The people that have lost their bars, their restaurants, their pubs, their salons, their retail stores, they're not coming back. All the people that went to college that can't pay their debt and can't get a job, it's not going to get better for them. So they're going to have an illusion that it's going to look better.
Give Laura and everybody else at your offices there in Kingston our very best for Christmas. Merry Christmas to all of your staff and a prosperous and a better new year. And again, to my listeners, check out trendsresearch.com if you haven't before. And subscribe to the journal. My great friend, thanks for being with us this year. And I hope we'll have many more conversations next year as things improve, hopefully. God bless.
And thank you so much for having me on. I greatly admire what you do. You're a real man and a real man of freedom, peace, and justice. So thank you very much. And you see that Trends Journal. Was it this week, what, 80 pages?
Yeah.
No advertisements. And there's not, you know, it's not because it's my magazine. We give every ounce of energy we have to make it the best magazine in the world. And if anybody could show me one that comes close to it, trendsjournal.com, contact me, let me see it.
We'll be waiting because a long time.
Yeah, you better prepare for the future because it's going to be hell on earth the way they're leading us.
Gerald, thanks again. Godspeed to you. Have a great Christmas and we'll speak again in January. The brilliant Gerald Celente, folks, live on the Richie Allen radio show this Thursday afternoon. Live from Brooklyn, excuse me, from Kingston in New York. Trendsresearch.com. Subscribe to the journal. Great guy. And thanks for all your comments there. Very interesting, that talking at the very beginning there about his schooling and the nuns. That takes me back to my early days in talk radio when I was producing another presenter whom I've mentioned before. And every now and then somebody would phone in about having a very negative experience of schooling, if the schooling was tied in somehow with a religious school. You know, if you went to a Christian Brothers school in Ireland, you had a national school or you had a Christian Brothers school, and the girls went to a convent school. So the Christian Brothers and the convent schools were obviously run by Christian Brothers and nuns, and the stories coming out of people, particularly when I started in the late 90s, and I would have been hearing from people then in the late 90s, they would have been in their 50s and 60s, phoning in to tell us stories very like the one Gerald told. Not just getting a slap on the arse, but raw physical abuse, raw violence and serious injury. This sort of shit was going on in schools. And when I was listening to that back in the late 90s, when a lot of this was coming into the open in Ireland. And the late, great Gerry Ryan, who I've mentioned before on this radio programme, one of the all-time great talk radio presenters, if not the best, I put him above anybody I ever heard anyway, were inundated by people telling these stories. And I went to St. Saviour's National Primary School, which was a very progressive primary school in Ballybeg. By progressive, What I mean was, it was co-ed, so it was boys and girls. I never went to an all-boys school. I went to a boys and girls school. And the classrooms are kitted out in 1979, 1980. The classrooms are kitted out with telephones, would you believe? They had an intercom system, a telephone system. It's amazing, really. And the classrooms were mostly glass to allow natural light into the classroom. Honest to God, now, this is back in the late 1970s that St. Saviour's School was built. And the teachers were all very young and idealistic. So we never saw any of that horrible violence. I never saw that. I think I was mouthing off a bit too much when I was in what we would call senior infants. And a teacher might have given me a whack over the palm with a ruler, a 12-inch wooden ruler. And then when I was in third form, or third standard, as we would call it, a teacher punishing me attempted to humiliate me by getting me to stand on my tiptoes with my nose leaning over a ledge with my nose touching a window, which put a lot of strain on my calves. But my grandfather ended up knocking him into the middle of next week. We never saw that, you see. We never saw that violence. You know, getting punched in the face and beaten and all that crap that went on. Anyway, lots of comments on what Gerald was saying. Thanks for them. I really appreciate it. There was one that I do want to read out in the interest of balance. In the interest of balance. Balance is no bad thing. It came in from Joseph, who takes umbrage with Gerald's categorisation of the agenda as satanic. And if I can just scroll on down there, if this bloody thing happens quick enough for me, I'll read it out for you. Let me read it out there now. Let me read it out there now. I'm so well prepared, eh? Eh? I just saw this comment. Yeah, Joseph says again, I don't care what faith you have. That is your own business. But saying it's all satanic is false. Sorry, he says. He earlier said, this is in the interest of balance now, it's violating natural law. They will pay for what they are doing in the end. But it isn't satanic. That is the Christian mindset, says Joseph. Thanks for your comment, Joseph. Your opinion is just as valid as Gerald's or as mine. I've read so many books over the years. I could name the authors. You know who they are. You've read them as well. You know, and they talk about the satanic proclivities. The satanic proclivities of some of those who are pushing these agendas, these anti-human, anti-humanity agendas. So Satanism plays some part in it, in my opinion, but that's not based on me being an expert at all. But saying that it's responsible for everything, Joseph might be right. It might not be responsible for everything. I'd be interested in getting your point of view. You can tweet it to at Richie Allen Show. Going to give a plug again, what I think of it, to our programme on Christmas morning. Now, a couple of Sundays ago, I wasn't in the best of form. I was having a bad few days. I was getting fed up with the radio programme. Rightly fed up with it. I think I mentioned this. And one or two people got a little bit worried thinking that there wouldn't be any radio show. And there was no need to worry about that. I wasn't going to give it up. But I was getting fed up with it. And I wanted to kind of reinvent it. Reimagine the Richie Allen radio show. And I'm still in the process of doing that. But one Sunday morning a couple of weeks back, I was fairly cheesed off. And I was out walking the dogs, crack of dawn, came back. And I was reminiscing about radio shows that I used to listen to on my local radio station. And I spent a half an hour gathering some tunes and one or two newspaper articles, not like Sunday View at all. And it was a lovely thing for me to do. I really enjoyed it. And it went down fairly well, judging by the response to it afterwards. So I was thinking over the last few days, and I spoke to my oft-mentioned better half, and I said, what I might do just for the crack, because I'm going to have quite a bit of time off over the Christmas. I always have a nice bit of time off over the Christmas, like every other talk presenter. We generally tend to finish on December 23rd, and we generally tend to come back on the first Monday in the new year. And that's the way I'll do it this year. I'll finish up, my last programme will be Wednesday, December 23rd, and I will be back on Monday, the 4th of January. I'll have about 9 days off. So that's a nice chunk of time off. Okay, it is. So I thought, why not do Christmas morning melodies between 10 and 12? Might suit some people, might not. Gather a few tunes, a few beautiful pieces of music, and spend a couple of hours together while Christmas fair, Christmas dinner, Christmas plans are being prepared and all of that. So that's Christmas morning, 10 o'clock UK time. What I will do, obviously, is I'll put the entire programme on podomatic.com. I won't edit the music out. So it'll all be there if you are interested in it and you want to hear it, but it doesn't suit you time-wise. You could be in California. It could be 2 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning. You might not want to be up for that. But then at 10 o'clock Christmas morning in California, it'll be 6 o'clock here. And you might think, oh, I might throw on that programme that the BBG put out. So that's Christmas morning at 10 to midday. Tonight, I mentioned this before, I've asked you to subscribe to this for a different perspective. Hayden Hewitt has been doing some reimagining of his own of the Trigger Warning Thursday night big show. And in recent weeks, Emma Kenny, Count Dankula, to name but two, he's had some fascinating guests on. He's had a sit down with them one-to-one, talking about what's been going on, not just the COVID thing, but gender politics, identity politics, and stuff like that. And a few weeks ago, he asked me would I participate. And I said I'd be delighted to participate. And I am going to be on with him tonight, excuse me, at 9 o'clock UK time. That's 9 o'clock UK time. To find that, very simple, youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. Do give it a subscribe. Subscribe to it while you're there and join in later on. He does monitor the comments coming in, scrolling up there, the live feed, the live comments, the live chat, I think they call it. He monitors that stuff and he'll read your comments out as he goes along. Joseph is asking me, did I watch Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr.? I didn't, Joseph, no. I didn't. I used to be an avid watcher of live boxing, but not so much these days, and I didn't think it was very palatable, to be honest. I didn't think it was very palatable to guys in their 50s, long past their prime, getting in the ring, even if it was for charity. I didn't like it very much, but that's just me. Lovely jubbly. Lovely jubbly. Hi to Faisal. Let me scroll on down. Hi to Susan at Ruby Dragon. How you doing, Susan? This is what's known in the trade as filling, dear listener. I'm filling till the end of the programme, but at least I've been giving you some information along the way. I'm filling. Next week then, before I say good day to you, I'm in theory, I'm back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock. I say in theory because we've got things to do tomorrow. We've got a full day tomorrow. Again, the better half is working from here. We've got to take the Jazz. That's our German Shepherd crossbreed dog who's very senior. He's got to go to the vet tomorrow in the early afternoon. We've got other things to do. I'm planning on being with you tomorrow. But we'll see how it goes. Next week, there are some guests booked in. I can't tell you who they are. I'll tell you tomorrow. A full week of guests next week, I think. And as I said, we're running out of time anyway. It's 15 days to Christmas Day. I'm looking forward to it, despite how crazy things have been and things are and things will get. I am genuinely looking forward to some time off as well. 9 o'clock then, Trigger Warning, youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. Join me at, or join Hayden Hewitt at 9, where I'll be his guest. Until then, I'm leaving you with a recent single from the great Bruce Springsteen. Bye for now. Bye.